Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Hello, and welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. This episode, you're going to hear about this month's new releases in Christian romantic suspense. I hope you will enjoy hearing from your favorite romantic suspense authors as they talk about the background of their latest books.
I'm delighted to welcome Cammie Tang to my show to talk about her latest romantic suspense, The Lone Rice Ball. So welcome to my show, Cammie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we're going to start with your heroine, and how does she feel about love at the beginning of this particular story?
So this is a little unusual for one of my romantic suspenses. Usually the heroines are in their mid to late 20s, but for this particular book, she's 38 years old. She's getting older, you know, she's wondering if she'll ever find romance. She was young and cute and kind of a flirt as a college student. Back in book one of my sushi series, which is my contemporary series, contemporary romance series. But then she came into her own in book four of that series, and I wanted to see what would happen to her if she continued to carry on this stigma of oldest single female cousin in her extended family. And so I decided to just write her romance as a romantic suspense.
Oh, I love that. You know, us older folks, we can, you know, we need love too. There's hope for her, right? what about your hero? Where did he grow up?
So he grew up on the north shore of Oahu in the state of Hawaii. And the reason I had him grow up there is because I grew up in Hawaii and my grandma lived on the north shore. And we visited her practically every week. So I decided, I'll have my hero grow up in the same place because I'm familiar with the area and I know, you know, the shops and the businesses. And I love the North Shore. It has like beaches and it has cool little artisan shops and great food. And so I decided to just have him grow up there. Part of the story is set there. And so, yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I love when we're able to use our background to give that extra boost of authenticity with our stories. So, go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say I was really excited to be able to write about Hawaii for this book and for this series just because I grew up in Hawaii, but none of my stories were set in Hawaii until I started writing this series. So that was actually kind of fun.
That is really fun. So let's switch to your villain. Is there a redeeming quality about him or her? And if so, what is it?
Okay, so he has good taste because he asked the heroine out on a date. And so that's actually how she gets pulled into the hero's investigation into the guy for drug running, because the villain asked her out on a date.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I guess he did have good taste, but you know, that's probably about all he had if he's into drug running. Not a good thing.
Yeah.
And you already talked a little bit about the setting, and it is a real place, but what was one thing you had to change to fit your story about the setting?
So there were a few fictional places that I added to the North Shore. So I set the hero's uncle's restaurant smack dab in the middle of Haleiwa. Even though the land is prime real estate there, it would be really unlikely that he'd be able to have a restaurant there. But I put it there anyway. I also added a resort hotel in the middle of a few popular, like, real-life beaches on the North Shore. I just kind of raised the land and threw a resort there. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, so in other words, if your readers should not go expecting that restaurant and that resort to be actually on the island.
No.
Yeah. So what about the underlying positive message of this story?
So What I want my readers to know is that God loves you no matter what you've done and where you've been in your life. You know, my heroine worries that she'll always be alone because of how selfish and flirtatious she was when she was younger. She worries that she's not lovable enough for someone to want to be with her in a committed relationship. You know, she's had so many terrible boyfriends and thinks that maybe the problem was her. You know, she wonders, she also wonders maybe her standards are just too high, you know, or maybe she just has too much pride. She feels like she's searching for something that's not even there, that doesn't exist. And so I want my readers to know that no matter what has happened to you, no matter what kind of decisions you've made, God loves you. It doesn't matter what has happened. And I hope that they take that. I hope that they take that away from the story.
Ah, I love that. Such a positive message, Cami. Well, we are almost out of time, so just leave us with what's one thing you want readers to know about the Lone Rice Ball.
Hey, so it's a little weird because this book is, it kind of functions as the fifth book in my contemporary romance sushi series, but it's also the first book in the Mahina Security series, which is romantic suspense. And the sushi series is straight contemporary romance without suspense, but Mamie's book had more suspense than those other novels. And I had a total of three standalone novels where the heroes worked for Mahina Security. So I just kind of threw the three books together in a series with this light plot thread about a friend of all the heroes and how her sister is missing, and it kind of runs throughout. But Mimi's story is the first book in this series.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your book on my show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am delighted to welcome back Danielle Grandinetti to my show. She's going to talk about her latest romantic suspense, His Boss's Little Sister. So welcome back, Danielle.
Thanks for having me.
So at the beginning of this story, how does your heroine feel about love?
So the heroine in my story, Samantha Martins, is actually left her hometown because her brothers are married happily, and there's just been so many other happily ever afters in her hometown that she's done. She left because she needed a break from all the happily ever afters.
Oh, so
she's not
she doesn't
too
think
good
she's
about
gonna,
it.
Yeah, she doesn't think she's going to get one, I'm guessing.
No, especially because the boy she loved left her without saying goodbye.
Yeah. So what about your hero? What's holding him back from finding love in this story?
So he left Samantha because he needed to provide for his mother, his widowed mother and sisters, and had no ability to provide for a wife either. So he went to go keep earning money, and the more he was away, the harder it became for him to face Samantha again.
Yeah, time has a weird way of doing that, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Until. Until.
Yes, well, of course. Yeah, we know there's a happily ever after coming. That's okay. We're not giving anything
yes.
away. The fun is getting there. So.
Yeah.
So what about your villain? What motivates him or her in this story?
So this was a fun one. It is a fairy tale retelling, and I chose Hansel and Gretel as the fairy tale, which in the traditional story is obviously a brother and a sister, so obviously that doesn't work for romance.
Yeah.
That would just be weird. So I went with his boss's little sister because my hero, Kyle, used to not only work for Sam's brother, but when he returns home, his brother hires him as a bodyguard, as Samantha's bodyguard. So it worked out perfectly to have that that play on, you know, a brother-sister-ish
mm-hmm.
thing. But the villain in the story is then the witch from the fairy tale. Though you don't necessarily learn who the witch is, whether it's a man or a woman or someone they know or don't know until, you know, later in the story. But the essence of the story is The villain is, you find out toward the end, so I don't want to spoil anything, that their motivation has a lot to do with love, actually, and how love can be both a weapon, what you love can change how your actions, are what your actions do for someone else. And I don't know, it was a fascinating theme that I didn't expect to explore, both from the villain's perspective, but also the hero and heroine's perspective.
Yeah, I like that. That's, I mean, it's so true. Love can end up being a motivation in the wrong way as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, so what about the fictitious place that you, did you base it? It's a fictitious place, but did you base it on a real place?
I did. So the story actually originated in my head after I discovered that the town of Racine, Wisconsin, used to be a stop on the Underground Railroad back in the late 1800s. And so I got this idea in my head, well, I write 1930s, so obviously, not the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how fascinating would it be to write a story about a house that was on the Underground Railroad just, decades afterward. And so I based the story off of that. So it's not Racine itself. It's just on the outskirts of town. So I was able to sprinkle in some, like, Racine Kringle, which is one of the sweet treats that is known in Racine. It's the hometown of the Kringle and all sorts of fun stuff like that.
Oh, that does sound like fun. You're able to use that kind of real history, mm-hmm. but the fictitious setting. So you already talked a little bit about that this is based on the Hansel and Gretel fairy tale. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else about the genesis of this story you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, so the other aspect of the story that I found exceptionally fascinating was, at the time, it was Prohibition, but Wisconsin was very loose when it came to Prohibition. Mm. They didn't really enforce it, but there was something that they did enforce. They enforced the they were very anti-margarine, and people, housewives, would smuggle margarine into Wisconsin from Illinois. They would color it yellow to make it look like butter and pass it off as a cheap imitation as opposed to real butter. And people who did that could face jail time, especially if they served in a restaurant. Fun fact, today in Wisconsin, you still cannot put margarine on a restaurant table without unless a customer specifically asks for margarine. It is still highly regulated here in the state. So it seems like
weird.
An unusual crime that you can bootleg margarine, but nobody cares during a federal prohibition on alcohol to smuggle it. But I had a lot of fun with exploring that theme.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we are going to close our time together with mm-hmm. what's one thing you want readers to know about his boss's little sister?
So one thing I would love readers to know is that this story is definitely a standalone. It's part of a multi-author collection that is connected because through a cookbook. But it also is connected to my Harvard and Crow's Nest series. You meet Samantha and Kyle in book one because that's her oldest brother's Happily Ever After. But you don't have to have read the series to read it. But it's also a bit of a Thanksgiving extended epilogue Happily Ever After to the series for my readers who have followed me through that particular one.
Ah, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing on my show today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome back Carrie Johnson to my show. She's going to talk about her romantic suspense coming out this month, Abducted in the Woods. So welcome back, Carrie.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So your heroine in this story, what does she want to be when she grew up, and did she become that person?
Her name is Sarah, and Sarah had a rough childhood. Her mom was an alcoholic and was often in between jobs, and she also kind of cycled through men, so it was not a good childhood. And so she spent time with her aunt in the area where the book was set. And then also she became a swimmer. She started swimming in elementary school and really trained hard in high school. And she made the Olympic team in college. So part of her backstory is that she has won 2 medals in the Olympics. And I swam as well. I was nowhere near that level. But just a funny side note is the Olympics were on. The Summer Olympics were on when I was writing this, so there was inspiration. But and she's now, as an adult, she has a swim lesson business, and she coaches at the YMCA swim team. So that's a tiny bit of my life in there, although I don't coach. I did swim on the Masters team as well. So it's kind of fun pulling from my own life with the swimming with Sarah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would say swimming was kind of her whole life. It kind of saved her through her difficult childhood.
Ah, yeah. So. And what about your hero in this story? What is his biggest regret?
In Abducted in the Woods, it's based on Tucker Brindley is my hero, but he has a twin named Tanner, and it's not a secret. His brother Tanner, who is husband to Sarah, he gets killed in the beginning of the story. So there's kind of a backstory with the three of them, with Tucker and his twin, Tanner, and then Sarah. And his biggest regret is not telling Sarah how he felt about her 9 or 10 years ago before she married his twin. So something had happened where his brother lied to him. And basically, Tucker has partial hearing loss, and his brother had lied, and they didn't have a real great relationship. So it was fairly contentious and competitive. So his brother Tanner lied and said Sarah was frustrated because he had the hearing loss and he couldn't talk, or he couldn't listen real well on the one side. So obviously that hurt his feelings, and he also was just insecure. So he never shared how he felt about Sarah. So as we start the story off, you know, they have that relationship where it's her brother-in-law, but he always had feelings for her, which of course comes out in the story, and vice versa with her.
Right, so. Yeah. But obviously by your title, Abducted in the Woods, there's a villain in this story. So does your villain have a redeeming quality? And if so, what is it?
That's a tough one because I would say the villain's, I guess he feels like he's doing something noble maybe. The base of what the villain is doing is he is stealing what's called INDs, which are investigational new drugs. Tanner, who is Sarah's deceased husband, worked at a pharmaceutical company, and they were coming up with a new drug, basically a new medication. And so the villain is part of this, and he has an underground medical black market ring, and he believes like stealing and selling these drugs before they're approved through FDA trials and such is like a positive contribution to the world, even though we know that's dangerous and deadly and there can be very bad repercussions from that. So, yeah, that would be, he's definitely doing it for money too, but he, you know, thinks it's kind of a noble quest. So.
All right. And what about the setting for Abducted in the Woods? I'm gathering there's going to be some woods around from the title, but
yes.
What else can you tell us about the setting?
All right, so I have a 4-book series. This is the second book in my 4-book series called Forest Ranger Rescuers. So in each of the 4 books, one character is a forest ranger. And in this one, it's set in northwestern Pennsylvania. And my husband's family is from northwestern Pennsylvania. And it's a beautiful area of the country. It's so quiet and peaceful. And we've gone there every summer for the last 8 or 9 years. My in-laws have a cottage near the Allegheny River. And it's beautiful and it's peaceful, but it also it's wild and it's very vast and there's lots of space and it has really neat landscapes. Like there's pine forests that are very flat and there's obviously small mountains and forest covered hills and all that. There's swamps and there's these alluvial islands, which are set in the middle of the Allegheny River. So I've tried to pull from each of these neat little landscapes, I guess, in Allegheny National Forest for each of the 4 books. So I just think it's a beautiful place to be setting a book, but it also is, villains can hide. There's lots of places to hide and lots of dangerous landscape too. So, yeah.
Yeah, lots of stuff for us to use in our books.
Part
of the story. So what was the easiest part of writing this book for you?
I would say the easiest part is obviously that someone gets abducted, and that is Liam, Sarah's son. My heroine's son gets abducted pretty quickly in the book. I really love writing kids and animals into stories. I think almost every one of my 8 stories with Love Inspired, well, only 5 have been published, but all of them I think either have kids or dogs in them. So, and this one actually has a cat. So I would say 2-part thing. I love writing kids and stories, and I enjoy writing Liam because I have 2 boys. They're older now, but I remember what the games they like to play, the way they talked, and just the mannerisms and such. So, and then also in the story, Tucker has a canine, a working canine that's a tracking and scent detection partner named Onyx. So, and he's fairly has a fairly important role in the story, especially by the end. So I love researching. It's just amazing what these canines, the working canines, do. And then the cat, is his name is Mr. Meow, and he's a therapy cat. He has a little bit of a role in the movie, or the movie, all right, in the book, too. So I love writing kids and animals in my stories. So that, to me, is easy. That comes pretty easy.
Well, thank you. That sounds delightful, Carrie, even in a suspense story. Well, we are almost out of time. Can you share your book's tagline before we close our interview today?
Sure. It is Pursued by Criminals with a Child's Life on the Line.
Ah, that sounds very mysterious, and we know that there's some fun animals in there, too. So thank you for sharing about Abducted in the Woods today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to welcome back Patricia Bradley to my show. She's talking about her latest romantic suspense release, On the Edge of Trust. So welcome to my show, Patricia.
Thanks. I'm great to be here.
So we're going to start with your heroine, and how does she feel about love at the start of this story?
She is not interested, really, in love. She's lost her mother, and then she lost her fiancé about 6 months later, and she really doesn't want to experience that hurt because she's afraid that she'll lose someone else. So she's kind of off, and she has especially said she would never date anyone who was a recovering alcoholic or drug addict. So, of course, what do? I put her together with someone who is a recovering alcoholic.
Okay, so that person, that hero, what is his greatest fear in this story?
Part of it is that he won't be able to rejoin the FBI as an undercover agent. And he really doesn't fear falling drinking again because he's given that to God, and he really believes it, that God will help him to resist, and which he's really done well and hasn't wanted to drink.
Mm. Okay. That's great.
But he can't convince her that all alcoholics will eventually fail.
Ah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what she believes. He can't convince
right.
her that won't happen. I think
right.
I said that wrong.
Yeah, no, yeah. Now you corrected it, so now we know. We got
yeah.
it. What about your villain in this story? What is his or her motivation?
Covering up another crime and greed. That's the motivation. And most of the time, that I have found that's what drives most crimes is first greed or they're covering up another crime.
Mm. Yeah. And what about the story's setting? What drew you to set your story where you did?
Well, this would be considered the 5th Logan Point book, my very first book, Shadows of the Past, where Scott was a player. He was a point of view character in Shadows of the Past. It was my first book, like I said, and I always wanted to redeem him. And I love Logan Point. It's just really neat. It's actually where I live here in Corinth, moved down to Memphis.
All right. So kind of familiar territory for you.
It is familiar. Very.
So you touched on this a little bit, Patricia, but why did you want to write this particular story?
I wanted to redeem Scott Sinclair. He was an alcoholic teenager. He actually lived on a trust. He's quite wealthy, but he doesn't come across as being wealthy. He's always kind of dismissed. Never really thought it was real money, and so he believes he needs to work. I mean, he wants to give back to society, especially now, and that's why he's an undercover FBI agent. And then I'll listen to the podcast Serial, and I got fascinated with podcasters and how they can actually bring attention to crimes where someone's been wrongly convicted. And mm-hmm. it fascascinated me. So, that's what my heroine's going to be, is a podcaster. Oh. So,
yeah.
True crime podcast.
Yeah, I've done that before, too, in one of my books. My heroine was a missing persons podcaster. True missing persons. But it's fun. It's a fun profession to give to our characters. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your book. And we're going to close our short time with, what is your book's tagline?
Oh, dear. It is. My brain just went dead. Why don't I look at the back of the cover? And it's not on here, but it is part. It is that sometimes getting close to the truth can be deadly.
Okay. I love that. Well, thank you again for sharing On the Edge of Trust.
Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
I'm excited to welcome Hannah Linder to my show. She's going to talk about her latest romantic suspense, The Red Cottage. So welcome, Hannah.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
So what lie does your heroine believe in this story?
Probably, so just to kind of give a little backstory on the novel, the book starts off where a girl, she's in love, she's getting ready to get married to the man of her dreams, and then she ends up getting attacked and she gets amnesia. And so she's rescued pretty much immediately by this handsome and elegant lord who steals her away to his manor, and he kind of takes over that position of protecting her. But throughout the book, he is continually kind of feeding her information about her past and insinuating things about her past that are more negative, kind of telling her lies about who she used to be. And so as the story progresses, she ends up taking all those lies to heart, and she really believes them about herself and kind of wrestles with that because, you know, she doesn't feel like she's that type of person, but he's telling her she is. And so those are kind of the lies that she struggles with, and as she's trying to figure out who she really is and where she came from.
Oh, I don't think I like him very much. Okay, so what is your hero's greatest fear in this story?
So the hero of the book is the guy that she was getting ready to marry before the accident. And he has kind of his backstory a little bit is he had something traumatic happen in his childhood that he's blamed himself for years. And that accident ended up alienating him at a really young age from all of his family and from his village that he grew up in. And so at 12 years old, he moves to the village where the story takes place, and he ends up meeting Meg, which is the main character. And at this point in the story, like, he's just very broken and very, like, ashamed of himself and kind of alone in the world. And so when he meets Meg, he kind of latches onto her as, I don't know, kind of like his salvation and his lifeline. And so when the book begins and he loses Meg and now she doesn't remember him, she doesn't know that she loves him, he's kind of like, he's like facing his greatest fear because she was the one thing that he was like, that was keeping him afloat. And so that's kind of like the most traumatic thing that could happen to him. So he kind of works through that as the book's going on and kind of at the end realizes, you know, you can't make people your lifeline or your salvation. Like, we have to receive that help from God.
Oh, I love that. I love how we can put that hope in our stories. So let's talk about the setting in this story. How does the setting move your tale forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think that the setting, in a lot of ways, is kind of represents the conflict that Meg, the main character, is facing, because, you know, she is in this really beautiful, rich manor, and everything's really elegant and just seems really perfect. And then on the other side, you know, she's finding out about this village that she came from, and she goes and visits it, and it's, you know, just this really sleepy, quiet, ordinary village that doesn't have a lot of glitter, doesn't have a lot of shine. And so it kind of represents like the choice that she has to make between worlds, because, you know, she has to choose whether she's going to, you know, marry the guy who's been protecting her and is rich, and or if she's going to, if she would be happy with that and satisfied with that, versus if she would be happier with, you know, the quiet, more ordinary life where her needs are and emotional needs are really met.
Yeah, that's a good, I love how we can put our characters in such, you know, interesting situations. So she has to make that choice. And what about the positive message of your story? I could guess at it, but why don't you tell us?
Yeah. Well, so I feel like for each character, each main character, they kind of each have like their internal conflict, and then they each, you know, have their truth that they come to at the end, which we talked a little bit about. Tom, his truth was kind of just like not making people your lifeline, that we have to get our help from God. And then Meg was more just not believing the lies that other people have told her, and kind of like trusting that even though she didn't remember who she was, even though she doesn't remember like everything about who she was, like just trusting that in that situation she made the right choices and chose the right man and sort of that thing. But kind of like a theme that I have noticed, like an overarching theme throughout the whole book that maybe isn't as overt, is just that, I don't know, like there's a lot of different opinions on this, but so on one side of it, you know, some people believe that, you know, who you end up with, you know, who your spouse is, who you end up marrying, it's determined by, like, you know, who you end up being around and proximity. And maybe there's like hundreds of different people that you could potentially end up and get married to and live happily ever after with. And maybe I think about this too much because I'm a romance author. But on the other side of it, you kind of have the thought of, you know, God is sovereign, and as a Christian, if we're walking with God and in his will, that he already has one specific person in mind for us, and that, you know, it doesn't matter how far away from you they are or differing circumstances, like if that's a person that is God's will for you, then he's going to like shift everything and move all the pieces to bring those two people together. And so with this story of Meg and Tom, I really just thought it was cool because I feel like they're kind of in that situation. Like, you know, the first time it was like proximity, they were around each other, they clicked, and, you know, was going to get married. And, but then everything changed and the whole situation flipped. And now they're in this like impossible situation where, you know, she's being feeded lies against him, and he's trying to win her over, but she hates him. And they're just really set up with all these obstacles. But in the end, like, they were the ones that were meant for each other. So like they overcame them, and like no matter where they would have met or what obstacles they were faced with, like I feel like they would have always gravitated towards each other and made it work. So I don't know. That's kind of a theme that I thought was neat about it.
No, I love that. That's a great theme. Well, we're going to close our short time together with, what is your book's tagline?
The tagline is, she forgot she loved him. He would die to make her remember.
Ah, I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing about The Red Cottage on my show today, Hannah.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have Darlene L. Turner on my show with her latest romantic suspense, Trail of Mountain Secrets. So welcome back, Darlene.
Thank you so much for having me.
So in this story, what past experience has had the most impact on making your heroine who she is today?
Okay, so my heroine, her name is Violet Hoyt, and her friend died tragically when a gunman entered their university library. And Violet felt responsible, and I don't want to give away all the what happens, but she felt responsible, and she carried that through into her adulthood. And even though it plagued her, it drove her to be a better person. So it kind of, it made her stronger and also made her more cautious and, you know, that type of thing. So, yeah.
So what about your hero in the story? What is his greatest fear?
His greatest fear is he is scared of wolves.
Mm.
And the funny thing about that is his canine's name is Wolf. Kind of sounds like a little bit of an oxymoron there. But he has to face his fears, and I won't tell you how, but you can probably guess it has to do with a wolf or two or three.
Well, you already had Trail of Mountain Secrets, and we all know that wolves live in the mountains. So, you know,
we already knew
there's something. But, yeah, the things we put our hero and heroine through, it's terrible.
Right?
Yeah, and it's fun when we're right. It's just fun. So your villain in this story, what is his or her motivation?
Their motivation is an age-old one. Money and taking over the family business, basically, is what the heroine wants to do. And that person will do anything to get there.
Ah, so. Yep. That's always a bad thing to want too much of, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is good for my life since I don't have a lot, and it's easy to be there. All right. Moving on. The setting of the story. I'm guessing there's some sort of mountains involved, but how does the setting move your story forward?
Yeah. So basically, you're right. Most of the book is set in the park, in the wilderness, in the mountains. And let's just say things go awry through the mountains and everything, and the wilderness itself becomes a character, and it just, you know, they have to move through the forest and the mountains and all the danger to solve the mystery. So yeah.
And does your story have an underlying positive message?
It does. This story is actually set at Christmas time. So it's about gifts. Now, I don't want to spoil it, but Violet receives a very special gift. But it's also about renewal and restored relationships and, of course, surrendering and trusting, surrendering to God and trusting Him with our lives. So that's basically the overall theme of the story. But yeah, it is set at Christmas, and there are lots of special gifts that happen in the ending.
Ah. I love that. Oh, that sounds so much fun. So we're going to close our short time today with what is Trail of Mountain Secrets? What is the tagline for this book?
A case of mistaken identity, a canine to the rescue.
Ah, I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing again, Darlene.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammakerfiction.com.